What if I told you that understanding your birth environment is one of the most powerful ways to take charge of your birth? When you know what to expect at every stage, from check-in to how labor progress is assessed, you can make informed choices and feel more confident. That's exactly what we're talking about today with the Birth Blueprint. A simple way to understand the lay of the land in labor and truly own your birth experience. Welcome to the Birth with Power podcast, where knowledge is power and power transforms birth. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, mom of two and practicing board certified OBGYN with over 20 years of experience and nearly 2,000 births attended. I've seen firsthand how the hospital system can leave women feeling unheard and uncertain, but that doesn't have to be your story. Here, you'll get the knowledge, support, and strategies to take charge of your birth experience so you can walk into the hospital feeling calm, confident, and empowered. Note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. See the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hey, real quick, before we get into this episode, my new and improved online birth course, The Birth with Power Pathway, is coming in May. If you want to feel calm, confident, and actually prepared for your hospital birth, this is for you. The best way to be the first to know when it drops, join my email list at drnicolerankins.com/email. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 293. Thank you for spending some time with me today. When you know your birth environment, you can own your birth experience. I'm going to say that again. When you know your birth environment, you can own your birth experience. Understanding what to expect from check-in to how your labor progress is assessed to IV fluids and movement options is key. Not understanding those things can easily lead to confusion and overwhelm, which are, let's be honest, terrible things for your birth experience. I have unfortunately heard stories of women assuming they'd be able to walk around during labor, but then they arrive at the hospital and they're immediately hooked up to continuous monitoring and IV, and they don't know if they could say no or how to say no or have a discussion about it, and then end up spending a good part of labor stuck in bed, frustrated and anxious. And that's exactly why we're talking about this today, so that doesn't happen to you. And that's also why I created the Birth Blueprint, a simple way to navigate your birth space with confidence, make informed choices every step of the way. I am so excited because the Birth Blueprint is part of my brand new Birth with Power Pathway online childbirth education class that is launching this May. This pathway is designed to really help you take charge of your birth. But while I'm putting the finishing touches on the Birth with Power pathway, let's go ahead and dive into what is the Birth Blueprint. So B in the Birth Blueprint stands for begin at arrival. And I am describing the scenario of if you come into the hospital with a concern, you think you're in labor, you think your water broke. This is not the situation for like a scheduled labor induction. So the moment you arrive at the hospital, you'll go through check-in or triage. It may also be called OBED, OB emergency department. There may be a separate OB emergency department just for pregnant women. That's the case in my hospital. And by the way, please do a dry run and know where you're going in the hospital well before you need to know where you're going in the hospital, because nothing is worse than trying to figure out where to go in the hospital at 2 o'clock in the morning, okay? So now, once you get to the hospital, and this process can vary a little bit, but it typically includes an initial assessment by a nurse. You'll get some monitoring of your baby, and there's going to be like 50,000 questions. Your health history, your plans for feeding the baby, maybe even what pharmacy you use. This is where it can be really helpful for your partner to know your health history so your partner can fill in the blanks and answer some of those questions. If you're in the throes of labor, it's going to be annoying to have to answer like, when was your last, you know, I don't know, when did you have allergies or any of those questions, okay? So helpful for your partner to know your health history to fill in some of those blanks, okay? Now, these triage rooms or OBED rooms can be quite tiny, so know that there may be limitations on how many people can be with you in triage, and those limitations are different than what is in the labor room. For example, in our hospital, you can really only have one person with you in OBED because the rooms are small. And when it's like you, your partner, me, and a nurse, there's just really not room for anybody else. Okay. So it's not that we don't want to have people there. It's just really like difficult to have more than a few people there. Typically that changes once you get in the labor room, but know that initial time, there may be limitations on how many people can be with you. In the OBED or triage, depending on the hospital, you may not see a doctor. You may just see a nurse who checks your cervix to see how dilated you are, who checks to see if your water is broken, and then they will report to the doctor or midwife what they found on their exam. If you end up staying, which isn't guaranteed, if you're in early labor, you may go home, but if you end up staying, then you're going to get moved to a labor room. Your labor room is going to be a much larger, nicer space. You may or may not get a new nurse. You'll get settled into the room. You will get hooked to the monitor again just to monitor the baby, oriented to the room, the call bell, the bathroom, all of that stuff, all right? And you'll probably get an IV placed or a saline lock. I'm going to talk about that next in the I, hint, hint, for the birth blueprint. And you may get some labs drawn if that wasn't already done in triage. And we get labs to get your blood type and also to know your blood count to make sure you're not anemic before you start your labor. Now, one thing I want you to remember is that that room is yours while you are there. So make that room yours. You and your insurance company are paying to use that space. So make yourself comfortable, okay? Get some blankets, towels. You can ask for a cot potentially for your partner if it's at night and you want to be there for a little bit. You can adjust the thermostat in the room. You can dim the lights in the room and ask that the lights stay dim in the room. You can string up Christmas lights if you want to. We actually have Christmas lights in our rooms, but you can string up Christmas lights. You can get music set up as long as it's not too loud and interfering with the neighbors. But don't be afraid to make that room yours. Now, I have a funny story about someone making a labor room theirs. So sometimes people use essential oil. Sometimes people have candles, but not real candles. Let me tell you why I'm telling you this story. So I went into a patient's room and they had some real candles burning. Listen, it was smelling delightful in there. I pulled up a seat. I sat down. We were just chatting, talking, whatever. The candles are going. It's nice and dim. Lovely atmosphere. The nurse walks into the room and she's like, Dr. Rankins, you know, we can't have real candles in the room because there's oxygen. So that is a big fire risk. So you cannot have real candles, but you can have plug-in candles. Just no real candles, but you can make the room yours. Okay, let's move on to I. I is for IV fluids and monitoring. Many hospitals routinely start IV fluids in labor to help keep you hydrated. And know that IV fluids are very safe. They may actually decrease the length of your labor, but only by about 30 minutes, so not a ton. But you can actually easily hydrate by drinking. And having IV fluids will tether you to an IV pole, which of course is going to limit your movement, but that doesn't have to be the case. You can have something called a saline lock or a HEP lock. So what that is that it's an IV that's placed and it allows for IV access, but without hooking up the IV to continuous fluids. So it's just taped to your arm and that gives you much more mobility than being attached to the pole. Now, the reason to have some IV access is in the event of an emergent situation or if you need antibiotics because you're GBS positive. Now, an emergent situation where it may come up is something like bleeding after birth or postpartum hemorrhage. And listen, you don't want to be trying to get an IV placed in that situation. So because emergencies are not predictable, I recommend a saline lock, especially if you know you're a hard stick. But of course, it's ultimately your choice. Just know that if you do decide to decline an IV, treatment will be delayed in an emergency. And there are some doctors who will give you a lot of pushback if you decline about having an IV. Finding something to wear during pregnancy shouldn't feel frustrating. And with Armoire, it's actually fun. Armoire is a clothing rental membership that gives you access to high quality, beautiful pieces that fit your changing body and your style. You take a quick 5-minute style quiz, pick what you love, and fresh styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. I recently tried Armoire and y'all, I loved the dress they sent. It was flowy, flattering, and it had pockets. I felt so good wearing it. You know that feeling when something just fits right? That's what Armoire delivers. And for you, Armoire is the answer to feeling cute and confident in maternity clothes without spending a fortune. No more clutter, no more wasting money on clothes that won't fit in a month. Just stylish, feel-good options on your terms. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/Dr. Nicole. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/Dr. Nicole. To get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again, try Armoire today. Okay, so the eyes, IV fluids, and monitoring. Fetal monitoring is another routine part of labor. And I'm not going to go into it into great detail, but the short story is the reason that we do fetal monitoring is that it may, emphasis on may, help detect if your baby is in distress. If we see changes in your baby's heart rate that are concerning for your baby's health, then we may be able to do some things to fix the situation, like position changes, a little bit of IV fluids or oxygen are things that can potentially help. Now, the reality is that electronic fetal monitoring, continuous fetal monitoring actually hasn't helped as much as we'd hoped. You would think that if you're monitoring all the time, you're going to pick up things, but actually that hasn't turned out to be the case. Now, we do know that electronic fetal monitoring does reduce the risk of neonatal seizures. Unfortunately, that's the only known benefit in low-risk women, and that's reducing it from a low risk to a little bit lower risk. It's already low to start with. Electronic fetal monitoring, continuous monitoring doesn't reduce mortality. It doesn't reduce cerebral palsy in low-risk women. And it actually increases C-sections and operative vaginal deliveries. And that's because there's a high false positive rate, meaning that most of the time when it looks like something may be wrong, everything is actually okay. Actually, more than 90% of the time, everything is okay, but you just can't tell if everything is okay until after the fact, okay? Now, monitoring can be continuous, which is what it sounds like. You're connected to the monitor continuously, or intermittent, which is off and on the monitor, where you're able to get up and move around. And intermittent monitoring is safe for low-risk pregnancies and supported by ACOG. Okay. So intermittent monitoring is something that is feasible if you qualify for it and if you are low risk. Okay. So you definitely want to know before you get to the hospital whether or not there are waterproof and wireless options, monitoring options, so you can move freely, because continuous monitors may potentially strap you to the machine, but we have newer technology with wireless monitors that allow you to move even if we are monitoring continuously. These are great options even for higher risk pregnancies. And then you want to know the hospital's policy on intermittent monitoring, because some hospitals don't do it at all. Actually, quite a few hospitals don't do it at all. So if that's something that you're interested in, you definitely want to ask about that in your prenatal visits. Okay, now let's move on to R. R is for refuel. One of the most debated hospital policies is about eating and drinking and labor, okay? Now, my take, and I'm going to tell you my take, and not all OBs necessarily agree with this, but my take is this. The uterus is a muscle. Muscles need energy. You get energy from food, so you need to be eating during labor. I have never understood why we really would starve people during the most energetically demanding events of their lives. Now, I take that back. I actually do understand a bit why it came about. The concern around eating is because of something called aspiration in the event of general anesthesia in a cesarean birth, all right? General anesthesia is when you are completely under with a breathing tube, and having that for a cesarean is quite rare. Most cesareans are done with what's called regional anesthesia, either an epidural or a spinal. And even when it's general anesthesia, aspiration is rare, okay? And the reason you're more at risk for aspiration in general anesthesia is because your muscles literally are paralyzed. When you have an epidural or spinal, you still have that gag reflex in place that if something goes into your lungs, you're going to, you know, to try to keep it from going down. But you don't have that when you're under general anesthesia. So the thought is that if you don't have anything in your stomach, if you do have something aspirate, it's not going to be anything that's dangerous, all right? So while many hospitals still restrict intake, research supports that everyone should be able to drink during labor. And I think most hospitals do this, actually, although a few still restrict to ice chips, which is completely outdated and against evidence. And really low-risk women can actually safely eat food during labor. You do want to choose foods that are low in fiber and move through your system quickly. So things like white toast, crackers, applesauce, peeled canned fruit like peaches and pears. You don't want to have the skin. And you want the fruit to be in water or juice. Bananas, honey, all of those things are great. And just FYI, just so you know, you're actually not going to be terribly hungry when you're in the active part of labor. Most of your energy is just focused on, your body is just focused on the labor. But in that early part, you may be hungry. And in that active part, you won't be very hungry. So you definitely, ahead of time, when you ask the hospital's policies on eating during labor and plan accordingly, again, so you can know your birth environment and own your birth experience. All right, moving right along. T is for tracking progress. Track progress. Vaginal exams are typically used to check labor progress, okay? Vaginal exams can be done by your doctor, midwife, or your nurse. Any of those folks can do it. Now, when we're checking for cervical dilation, how open your cervix is, cervical effacement, how thin your cervix is, and then the position of the baby's head in your pelvis, that's called the station. I go into a more detailed description of those inside the Birth with Power pathway, including visuals, but you get the idea. It's dilation, effacement, and station. Know that these exams are absolutely not, I repeat, not an indicator of when birth will happen. They just give us a snapshot of what's happening at that moment. And we can also see how things have changed or not changed over time. There are some other things that can be used to track progress, specifically when you don't have an epidural. And that is, how are your contractions changing in intensity and frequency? And then how you are feeling and how you look overall. All right. When you don't have an epidural, you're going to be more in tune to those things. We're going to be able to see those things more, the intensity, the frequency, how you look. You'll also be able to feel the baby dropping lower in your pelvis and whether you feel the urge to push. So this is more so when you don't have an epidural. When you have an epidural, we can't pick up on those other signs as much because they're being covered by the epidural. Few things to know about vaginal exams. They're typically done every 4 to 6 hours. They really don't need to be done more often than that. We used to do every 2 hours, but that's really too often. They may be sooner if you notice a big change in how you feel. So if, for example, we checked you an hour and a half ago and now you're like, no, I feel a lot of pressure. I feel like something's coming. Then yes, we should check to kind of see what's going on. But typically they're done every 4 to 6 hours. Know that these exams are an estimate. Remember, we are not putting a ruler inside of your vagina. So if someone says you're 5 centimeters, someone says you're 4, someone else says you're 4 centimeters, don't get too caught up on those slight differences. Now, 4 to 7, if two different exams, that's concerning. But within 1 centimeter, that's just going to be a difference in examiner and not necessarily a difference in your exam. Or if someone says 50%, somebody says 70% efface. Those are just differences between the examiner. Don't get hung up on that, all right? Now, this is really important. Your doctor should always, always, always ask your permission before performing a vaginal exam. I'm quite ashamed to say that we don't always do this, that I didn't always do this, I'm embarrassed to say. We have a terrible habit of saying, and this is kind of how we're taught in obstetrics, hey, I'm going to check you now, as opposed to asking, is it okay to check you now? And we're not like mean or forceful with it, although we've seen some of those terrible videos where people are. But in general, we're not mean or forceful with it when we say, oh, hey, I'm just here to check your cervix. It's just that we haven't been taught that it's actually appropriate to ask first before we do something invasive like that. And that's actually a big problem in our field that still persists. We should really get your expressed consent and ask, is it okay to check you now before, during cervical exams? That's one thing I learned in this work that really bothered women. It really came to my attention through connecting with women through this podcast and social media and things like that. And that brings me to the last piece, which is you can always decline an exam. You don't have to say yes to a vaginal exam, but no, and I'm keeping it real, I'm going to be honest, there will be some doctors who may get frustrated or even upset. We rely pretty exclusively on vaginal exams to determine if your labor is progressing. And when we don't have that information, some of us don't know another way to tell if your labor is progressing. And honestly, if you have an epidural, there aren't really other great ways to assess labor because those physical cues aren't there. And some of us just get frustrated with not knowing the information or not knowing what to do or just being patient, okay? So I recommend that if you decide that you want to decline an exam, which again is perfectly within your right, just give a timeline for when you are willing to agree to an exam. So say, hey, you know what? I'm not comfortable being checked right now. Let's check back in 2 hours and see where things are. Okay. And then you kind of reassess from there. All right. And then the H, which is the H in the birth blueprint, is hustle or hold still. Movement and positioning in labor can make a really big difference. We know that changing positions can help labor progress and they can help make contractions more manageable to move around. Now, some hospitals really encourage movement while some others may expect you to mostly labor in the bed. It really depends on the hospital. I will say that I believe we are getting better at this, but it's not universal. So it's something that you definitely want to find out ahead of time and you definitely want to know if the hospital has things to help facilitate movement, like a birth ball, which is basically just an exercise ball, the peanut ball, which is literally it's shaped like a peanut, if they have squatting bars, you want to know what options there are to use water, like the shower, or are there tubs. You want to know if the nurses are familiar with something called spinning babies. Spinning babies are different positions to help get the baby in a better position for birth. This is not a deal breaker if the hospital doesn't know spinning babies, if the nurses don't know spinning babies techniques, but it's really helpful. And it's also a good sign that they're open to learning new things to help progress labor outside of our traditional things. And you want to just ask also about monitoring options. We talked about that too. If you have wireless monitoring, because that's going to let you move. And you want to know how they support movement with an epidural. Having an epidural does not mean you have to be confined to the bed. You can still do movement. You can still use the peanut ball. You can still even do hands and knees position, depending on how dense your epidural is. You can do something called the throne position, where we fix the bed to sit you up. You can still do some spinning babies moves with an epidural. So you want to know, does the hospital have that equipment? What options there are for like water, spinning babies, and then how they support movement with an epidural. All of those things are important for that H, hustle, or are they forcing you to hold still? Okay, so just to recap the birth blueprint, B is for begin at arrival. Know where to go, know the procedures of the hospital. I is for IV fluids and monitoring. Remember, you don't have to be connected to IV fluids. You can get a saline lock, and you want to know what monitoring options are available: wireless, continuous, intermittent. R is for refuel. What are the hospital policies on eating and drinking in labor? If you are low risk, you should be able to eat. Remember, you want to eat those low fiber foods that move through your system quickly. T is for track progress. Vaginal exams are done every 4 to 6 hours. They really don't need to be done much sooner than that. And there should be permission and expressed consent on your part first before a vaginal exam. That's a hill I will die on. And you can always, always decline. Just have a plan for when you do feel comfortable doing it. I should also say, you can also ask for a vaginal exam if you're curious about what's going on. You can always ask. That's totally within your right as well. And then the H is hustle, or are they forcing you to hold still? Does the hospital support movement, even with an epidural? What birth aids do they have, like a birth ball, a peanut ball, squat bar? What options do they have for like laboring in water? Now, if you want to continue learning simple, powerful ways to take charge of your birth, you need to be getting my Birth with Power Brief. It's my free weekly email where I share quick tips, my insider insights, easy action items to help you, and it's delivered right to your inbox. Head over to drnicolerankins.com/email to sign up. It's an easy way to stay informed and empowered throughout your pregnancy journey. Now that's it for this episode. If you found it helpful, share it with a friend, because every pregnant woman in person deserves to feel informed and empowered. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving the show, I'd really appreciate you leaving a quick review. It helps more moms to be find birth with power. And most importantly, it helps them step into their birth with confidence, just like you. And don't forget to sign up for the Birth with Power Brief, my weekly email with tips, fun facts about pregnancy, and action steps to help you take charge of your birth. Now do me one more favor and come on back next week. And remember, trust your power and take charge of your birth.